Coming up on this episode of the Mario Rosenstock podcast.
You are unapologetically a racist.
You?
For the last... No, you're a dog whistler. Dog whistler.
See you.
What?
You're just living off other people's fame. Because all you do is their bloody voices.
I love every second of it.
You're nothing but a waste of Rosenstock. And I tell you what, I've had enough of this nonsense.
I just care about... You just... Don't leave my studio like that. Come back.
Yes, you see, we had you going there for a second, didn't we? Didn't we? Nah, only a joke. That was Niall Boylan and myself just playing a little prank. But it was all to make a more serious point about the media and how shows promote themselves on social media, which you'll hear about a little later in this episode. Niall Boylan was a guest on this podcast series a couple of years ago. It was a fascinating conversation covering his 30-year career in radio, his reputation as a so-called shock jock, and his incredible personal life story. But we've invited Niall back onto the podcast for a specific reason and another chat, because just a few weeks ago, like seemingly everybody else at the moment, he gave up his lifelong radio career to run as a candidate in the Dublin constituency in the upcoming European elections. It's a crowded field, and Niall is a very interesting candidate. Having spent so many years as a phone-in radio presenter, Niall believes that he has a unique selling point, a unique understanding of Irish voters and the kind of representation they need at a European political level. He reckons he's taken over 250,000 calls on his show during that career. And in our chat, he explains why he's the man for the job and what he plans to do.
And I went, let's just do it. I'll do it. Because I really feel it's the next logical stage in what I do for a living, which is listen to people, you know, and take responsibility for what's wrong in their lives. I said, how do you know he's an asylum seeker? Well, you can tell. And I said, how do you know he's not a doctor? Or he's not a lawyer? Or a school teacher? Just because he's black, you're telling me that he's an asylum seeker? That's wrong. That's wrong. Colour should never, ever, ever come into it. It was humiliating. It was embarrassing. And there was staff coming into the radio station who would have seen my car, probably, the breakfast show staff, yeah. Right? And they're going, Jesus, Niall's in early. We didn't really know Niall is asleep in the back seat in the car. So the first day I went out, yeah. I was all excited. This yeah. is great. Newbie. They're going to be hugging me and everything.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
thank you, Niall. Niall, he has arrived.
Shaking hands, kissing yeah. babies, all that kind of yeah. stuff. Didn't quite work out like that.
No. This is, of course, bearing in mind who I'm talking to, a very open and honest conversation about some of the big issues facing this country right now. Not without its light-hearted moments, though. And my full chat with Niall is coming up in just a few minutes. But as I mentioned, Niall joined me on the podcast a couple of years ago, and he performed for me. He kindly agreed to play a starring role in this episode's comedy sketch. It was a cracker, and so we thought it was a good time to give it another outing.
Welcome along, Ireland's classic kids. Here we are on this Tuesday night. Now, I got a very interesting email that I'd love to have a chat with you about. And John sent me in the email and he said he was out shopping. No, I was out shopping with the wife the other day. We were looking for a television and she spotted these lights with a camera on it. You know, the ones the girls use for OnlyFans. And I said to her, well, what do you think of that? And she said, I wouldn't fancy doing that to make a bit of extra money. And I said, are you mad? You'd actually take your clothes off to make a bit of extra money. And she seemed really keen on it. I have to be honest now, I'd be disgusted. There's no way I would allow my wife to take her clothes off on camera for other fellas to peddle at. So there's absolutely no way, Noel. I'm just wondering what your callers would think. Well, now, it is an interesting topic. And I don't know, how would you feel if your wife, your daughter, your mother decided to go on OnlyFans? Because it is mainly women that do it. There is some lads that do it, but mainly women. So how would you feel? Give us a call or give us a text. Do it now. 087-188-0008. And let us know. You know, would you be happy if your other half decided to take her kit off for the enjoyment of other men? Now, all right, let's go to a few callers if we can. Leo, you're on line one. Leo.
Hi, Niall.
How are you doing, Leo?
Good, yeah, I'm really enjoying your show.
Leo, how would you feel if your other half decided, you know, I'm going to get me kit off for money?
Well, he doesn't actually take his kit off for money, but actually, I'm kind of interested in taking my top off.
Oh, right.
Times, I was in the Phoenix Park there a couple of years ago, and I took my top off, and somebody actually gave me 50 cents.
Oh, very good,
yeah,
very
so,
good.
They
very
said,
good.
Have you ever tried OnlyFans?
All right.
So I was thinking of if I took my top off a bit more.
You might get a bit of money.
Yeah, there's a friend of mine who I work with.
I think
with.
I've seen that picture of you.
There's
top
a friend of mine who I work with called Pascal.
Right.
And actually, he logs on and watches me.
He's got plenty of money, hasn't he?
I think he has a good bit of a pedal as well.
All right. Right.
So I just personally, I think it's, you know, each man to his own.
Absolutely. Every man to whatever he wants. But do you think there's a bit of a stigma? Do you think people really want to see your bare chest? That would be different.
I really hope there's a stigma. A stigma.
Yeah, I mean, you don't.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were talking about a growth or something.
Yeah.
No, I have no stigmas. My chest is hairless like yourself.
Yeah, but you don't really have you wouldn't really have the six-pack, would you, for it?
Well, you know, it's all about how you work at things, you know.
Yeah, well, let me just bring another caller if I can. Stay with me there, Leo, for just a second. George, you're in Vox Rock. You're in Ireland's Classic Hits. How you doing, George?
Yeah, loving the show. Absolutely loving the show. It's great to be able to talk in a libertarian way. Just get it off your chest. I was thinking of going on OnlyFans as well.
Really?
But
at your age?
But not to show my dodger.
Right.
I want to show Demons people to pay
right.
for my naked opinion.
Oh, very good. Never thought of that. I don't think they want to hear you. I think they want to see you, George.
OnlyFans opinion.
Yeah, right.
George.
Right.
That's what I want.
Right.
By the way, could you put me in touch with that hair removal place?
Right.
Or the place, hair restoration. No, is that clinic of yours still open?
That's for adding the hair, not taking it away.
No, I want to add it.
All right, I see. Thanks. It'll make you look younger anyway, George. And maybe then you could go on OnlyFans. But you've been listening to Leo there. He likes to go for a prance around, a walk around
I'd
the park.
I'd pay for that.
Huh? Would you?
I would. I'd love a look of Leo.
Would you?
I like a bit of Fine Gael.
Right. Okay, well, let me just go to another call. Let's just get a female perspective on this, because I think it's interesting to get the female perspective. So, lads, hang on with me. Joan, you're in Dublin West. How are you doing, Joan?
Hi, Niall.
Hi, Joan.
I love the show.
I'm glad.
Brilliant. Can I just say that I've been on OnlyFans now for 3 years.
Have you?
Yes.
Are you making any money?
No.
Do you owe the money?
Yes.
I can imagine, yes. So I'm wondering,
hasn't been working out well.
Have you got any fans at all?
I think it's because that's how I lost my seat in the last election. Because I was showing my seat.
Oh, right, I see. So did you get any fans at all?
None.
No, right, okay. Maybe you could promote it a bit better on your social media.
Give me your logon details. I'd have a look at that.
Maybe Leo might want to have a look. He'll subscribe to you.
No, thanks, no.
Right, okay, I'm just maybe wondering. Well, okay. Well,
I'd look at George's, though.
Right, okay, you probably would.
Obviously, Joan is a woman.
Yeah, let's go to a younger... Well, he's not really a younger man, is he? Matt, how you doing? You're from Cork. You're in Ireland's Classic Kids. How you doing, Matt?
How you doing, Niall?
How you doing, Matt?
Do you know, I was thinking of actually growing back my mullet.
Were you?
Would they pay to see that, I wonder?
No. I think it has to be parts of your body.
Right, but is a mullet not a part of my body?
Not essentially. It's more of an extension to your body.
Not all of us have hair extensions now.
Well, I understand that.
It's a bit unfair of you to categorise everybody as having hair that's extensions.
That would be offensive.
My hair is my own.
Absolutely. Well, I'm delighted to hear that.
Okay.
But maybe I suppose you could show them a bit of leg, Matt.
No.
Joan did that. It didn't work out for her, but...
I mean,
yeah, show them a little bit of leg maybe or
There's
something.
Any mullet for OnlyFans, I'll do it.
Right, okay. I'm looking at some of the texts coming in. Somebody says, Niall, I'd rather not see any of Leo's chest, to be honest with you. And as for George, he's a little bit old. Joan, on the other hand, maybe sure I'd give it a try if I did it with a blindfold on. And as for Matt, I don't know. I think he's too much of a liberal to take his clothes off in the first place. He might offend people.
What a pro. What a pro Niall is. Well, let's get to the more serious matter of Niall's decision to put his long and successful career in radio on hold and throw his hat into the ring of the European elections. Here we go. So, Niall, you were on the podcast, Mario Rosenthal podcast, 2 years ago. Time flies.
You just said to, before we come on, 2 years ago. It actually felt like last month.
We had a long and interesting conversation about your broadcasting career, Classic Hits. At the end of it, I think you were telling me you were moving to Florida.
That's the plan. That's the long term.
That's the Shawshank Redemption plan now.
Guantanamo.
Yeah. That's where I'm going to meet Andy Dufresne in Florida. But something has happened in the meantime. You've declared yourself as a candidate for MEP, the European elections. Why did you do it?
See, everybody has asked me that. And throughout the years, callers have said to me, because you know it's an angry show, so people ring up. No, I can't get this. No, I've been on a hospital waiting list. No, I've been doing this. No, I can't get a house. No, my daughters and sons have moved to Australia because of the cost of living. So I'm constantly dealing with that, bombarded with the complaints every night from people telling me how they can't survive in the city. So I kind of got to the point where everybody was saying to me, no, that's brilliant. That's a great answer. And I'd give them a good answer. And they go, why don't you run for election? And I kind of toyed with the idea for a long time, but I just felt I wasn't at that point yet or ready for that yet. And then about, oh, a month and a half ago, I was approached and I said no. I was approached last year, actually, by a different political party, which I won't go into. But I said no, and I said no again. And then about 3 weeks before I announced it, they approached me again and said, please, 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 please. And I went, oh, I'll talk to my wife. So I sat down with my wife, we had a good chat about it, you know, about the implications of giving up a 30-year career. I was in the middle of a contract, so I'm guaranteed work, you know, there's no problem there. And I went, let's just do it. I'll do it. Hmm. Because I really feel it's the next logical stage in what I do for a living, which is listen to people, you know, and take responsibility for what's wrong in their lives and try and help them in some way. Because I've campaigned for a lot of things throughout the years, you know, and different, and I'll come to those in a few minutes. So it was the next logical stage. It was a big risk, don't get me wrong. I mean, there's 23 people or whatever it is running at the moment for Dublin. Now, thankfully, I'm polling at number 3, which is really good. Boyle Sports have me at number 3. The Irish Independent polls of the weekend have me more or less in contention for a seat. And for a nobody, really, when it comes to politics, to get that high initially at the very start is great. And the reaction I'm getting out on the street is great. I mean, people know me.
How many seats are there?
4.
So you're polling 3rd.
Yeah.
Which means it wouldn't be crazy to suggest you might be elected.
If the election was tomorrow, based on what we're seeing, I'd be elected.
Right.
But the problem with the European elections, and we've seen this in the past, is very few get through in the first count. Because the first count, the quota, could be 70,000, depending on how many people vote. Obviously, it's worked out in how many people vote divided by 4. So very few people get the quota. So generally, you're depending on second counts, transfers. You know, I mean, if you can get in on the first count, it's over to the Shelburne House and have a good old drink and let the rest of them scavenge over the last 3 seats, which would be great.
Yeah.
But you're most likely going to be waiting to get transfers, yeah, or second preferences or whenever to get you over that line, to get you over the quota. So it's a nerve-wracking day, I imagine. I've never been in the atmosphere, but my campaign manager says to me, you really don't want to be there. It's quite stressful.
Yeah. Okay, you know? So like when you were on the radio, and when you are on the radio, you began to feel that it was almost a bit like a politician's clinic, that these people were almost coming to your clinic, mm-hmm, asking you, telling you about their problems, and you were saying to yourself, I'm answering their problems, I'm doing my best, but I have no power, I'm not a politician. So why not just flip it and just try and see if I can actually do something about it? Did you get a feel, was it something that happened with you that you went, if not now, when?
Well, this is it. I'm 60. So,
So
5 years in the EU, yeah, will bring me to 65, which, yeah, is retirement age. Now, yeah, knowing me, I probably won't retire at 65. I'll still be there, yeah, on the radio probably or something, when I'm 90 going, hello, welcome to the show. Mm. You know, so I'll still be doing it because I just have this thing that I need to be talking to people all the time. People just tell me to shut up. That's why I call my podcast, by the way. They tell me to shut up because everybody tells me to shut up. And if I go right back to my school days, my reports in school I found in my father's house. My father passed away. I went through the attic and I found all my old school reports when I was 7 or 8 years of age, right? And every one of the reports said, Niall is a really good student. He's a great listener. But can you please tell him to keep quiet with the class? Because I never shut up. I was constantly distracting everybody by talking all the time. Okay. So it just must be in me.
Okay, quick technical question.
Mm.
Can you go back to your job if this doesn't work?
I hope so.
Then you hope.
I don't. Well, I don't know because I have to cut ties, correct, legally with the radio station.
Couldn't have maintained both?
No, I can't. My contract at the moment is finished.
Would have made the moratorium kind of difficult.
Yeah. I mean, look, there was this... there was this whole thing, right? The day I launched was about 3 weeks ago. I think it was 3 weeks ago. I'm losing track of time because I'm so busy at the moment. But 3 weeks ago. And I went to sign the register, you know, with the county sheriff, because you have to sign and register to run for election. And you have to bring your ID and all that kind of stuff, which anyway. So I did that, and I said, right, and I had told my boss, we had spoke about it 2 weeks beforehand, that from this particular day, I'll go off the air. because the rules of the Broadcasting Authority mean I cannot run for election and be on the air at the same time doing a talk show. There's a little bit of confusion about those rules, by the way. I could still be on the air doing a gardening show.
Okay.
Technically speaking.
All right.
As long as I don't ever mention politics or vote for me.
Or growth.
Yeah. I mean, think about
it. It's hard on a gardening show. Now, there's very little growth here.
I'm doing flower arranging tonight on the radio, but okay.
What we need is new seeds. We need new acorns to be developed.
So the Sunday Business Post ran the story on the Monday. I was due to do the Monday night, and anyway, but we had already decided 2 weeks beforehand that for the 2 weeks leading up to me announcing it, I wouldn't talk about politics on the air because I didn't want to give anyone a reason to complain. So I talked about inane social topics. You know what I mean? Like, is it okay to put your 15-year-old on the pill or whatever? You know, those kind of things. So I didn't do it. But the kind of Sunday Business Post thought they had a gotcha moment. We got you. We know he registered. Is he still on the air? Quick, contact the BAI immediately.
Right.
Get him on. Of course, the BAI, or Commissioner Mann, as they now call, contacted the radio station. What's the story? He's still on the air. I've never seen Commissioner Mann act so quickly.
Right, okay.
But I said they were there. They contacted the radio station. No, he's finishing tomorrow night anyway. He was announcing it tomorrow as soon as he registered it. He hold on there for a second. And there was kind of this whole thing, Boylan shouldn't be on the air, Boylan shouldn't be on the air. So that was the kind of start of what I noticed from the very, very start. It's, let's take him down. We can't have this man in politics.
Why?
Because he's not a politician. He's a radio broadcaster and he's a threat to the government because the man talks sense.
Mm.
That's what they don't want you in politics. It's like a little clique.
Really?
Yeah, they all just want to say, you know, well, we believe that the government are doing its best and we're proceeding with our plan that's been going on for 6 months and we're hoping to ramp it up a little bit. Whereas I just say, get it done, will you, for God's sake. So I'm a common sense talker, you know what I mean?
But surely the media would love that.
The media kind of like it because I'm good for them. I was on News Talk earlier on, right? So I'm good for the media because I excite the audience a little bit because the audience is going, he's right, you know. See him, he's right, he's right. But the politicians don't like me because they should be saying what I'm saying, but they're not.
Why? Why aren't they saying it?
Because they're pandering. They pander to NGOs. Mm. They pander to each other. They pander to the opposition. So they're constantly pandering and trying to keep too many people happy at one time.
Yes, I understand.
And there's a lack of leadership. Now, I'm not going to run at the doll, obviously, but there's a huge lack of leadership. No one's willing to make decisions. If you go back to COVID-19, right, you had Leo Varadkar. And Leo then, you know, he would have been on TV. I remember one point when they were in the middle of lockdowns and they were introducing a new stage 5 lockdown, stay in your gaff, all that kind of stuff. And Leo was going, I don't really think this is necessary. But the following day, Leo was kind of dragged back in and said, you know, keep quiet. So he kind of lacked the leadership to say, just get out and say it. You know, at this point, I don't think this is necessary. Now, he admits it now that the last lockdowns were probably unnecessary. Mm. But he wouldn't say it at the time, even though he was thinking it and he knew it. So they lack the leadership to make these decisions. And that's what's wrong with our government at the moment. What's happening in the canal down in Grand Canal Quay, it's inhumane, right? I mean, you shouldn't have people sleeping in tents. But most of those people shouldn't be here. But we lack the leadership to say that. We lack the leadership to say, you know, with the EU Migration Pact, for example, which they're talking about, if they want to vote in, oh, you know, we're going to have reception centres near Dublin Airport and faster processing and all this kind of stuff. We should be doing that. Anyway, there's no reason we can't do that right now. But they won't say that. What they say is, we need to get them out of the tents and find them accommodation. No, that's not what we need to do. We need to make sure that more people, because as soon as you move those people from the tents and get them accommodation, another 400 or 500 people will come in. We need to have a deterrent to stop people who are not genuine. Those who are genuine, by the way, people don't think I'm heartless. I'm not heartless. If somebody's fleeing war, if somebody's coming from persecution or their life is genuinely in danger and they're an asylum seeker, we should roll out the red carpet, look after them. But most of them, by the Minister's own, Minister of Justice's own admission, most of them are not. They're economic migrants coming from safe countries.
Okay, we'll come back to that in a minute.
Yeah.
I want to come back to your whole, what, your belief system and your values and all that sort of stuff.
I know, I talk too much. I'm sorry.
No, that's great. But I just wanted to ask you a couple of technical questions. So just because you wear your heart on your sleeve as well, you know, and you've talked before about certain difficulties you've had in your life and you've been very open about it and sharing, and you've shared with me some of them in the past and we'll go back over them as well. But so I'm just wondering, for example, I mean, everybody has to earn a living, right?
Yeah.
So what are you, like, obviously they've stopped paying you in your job. So that had to be a factor.
I had a couple of weeks holidays.
Did you?
Yeah, I know. So a couple
of weeks. But what are you going to do for money?
But nothing at the moment. I'm kind of dipping into savings.
Yeah. You have some savings.
Yeah, well, small amount.
Yeah.
Not very much.
Yeah.
So that'll be gone. I'll be on beans and chips by the end of the month.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? and hopefully I'll get the job.
Yes.
And if I get the job, by the way, I want the job because I genuinely have a passion for what I want to do
yes.
for Ireland and Dublin in particular, obviously because I'm running in Dublin. But if I don't get the job, I'm on the dole.
Okay.
And that's it.
Okay.
You know, but now hopefully it would be great to think that my old employers might want me back again.
How does your wife feel about it?
My wife is the most supportive person you could ever meet. She would support me doing anything that I believe is right.
Including this?
Including this.
And you talk this over with her.
Oh,
go for it.
I wouldn't do it without her support. I couldn't do it without her support. And because she's my rock, she's my everything. And I just wouldn't do anything without her. So she's part of it. And she's coming out canvassing with me every day. She's part of the whole thing. You know what I mean? So she's just an amazing person.
Okay.
That actually chokes me up a little bit.
Oh, that's nice. What's her name?
Karen.
Karen.
Yeah.
Hello, Karen. You will be listening to this because you were there.
She's to put up with me.
He will force you to listen to his media performances during the day, believe me.
How did I do there? Is that okay?
I was waiting for you to do the impersonation.
But it's like the Cookie Monster. So here's a new question for you. Do you think that the media accurately portrays what people care about and the extent to which they care about it? If you juxtapose that against what you're seeing on the doors?
No.
So you're saying it's a different world?
Absolutely.
Explain those two worlds to me. What's the media's world and what's...
Well, you take the TV3 debate for the EU
yeah.
last night, okay, for the EU elections. I wasn't invited on. Even though there were people on it that are way down below me, I wasn't invited on.
Why weren't you invited on?
Whatever criteria they use to invite people on, I have no idea. But
I don't know.
So what we watched last night, what we got to watch, was five people agreeing with each other, but who agreed with each other the most? That's kind of what it was. So there wasn't the alternate view. We don't get the alternate view. And I'll give you an example. In the referendum, the recent referendum, the no yes referendum for, you know, the family and woman being the constitution, all that kind of stuff, right? When it launched, I remember they, RT News, 61 News said, oh, the launch of the campaign today for the referendum, 30 days beforehand, you know, when the referendum kind of launches. And they said, and the no voters were out in force. And there was like 20 no voters outside the door with signs. And there was like 20 seconds. But the yes campaign, and they went to the, you know, Women's Council of Ireland and they had this big thing, soiree, with their champagne and wine and talked to a load of people and that went on for about 5 minutes.
Mm.
So the media, you can see the bias from the very, very start, that the no was seen as some sort of negative thing and the yes was seen as something joyous to celebrate. And that's wrong, because it turned out, as we know, it was a record referendum, a record defeat for the government.
Mm.
It was over 70% no, apart from the people of Dunleary. 70% no, because they're good people in Dunleary. 70% no, which shows the people had spoken. But in saying that, the media didn't portray that. All along, there was polls, oh, the yes is in the lead, yes, 70% of the people are going to vote, yes, that's what all the polls were saying. The polls were wrong. They were wildly inaccurate. It was a no vote.
Mm.
And the media don't portray this. Well, what's going on at the moment? The media, they're too politically correct. They're afraid to say anything because they don't want to upset people and they don't want to get complaints from NGOs. They don't want to have to deal with that. So, you know, and by the way, I've been in media for 30 years and I say things that people understand. How many complaints do you think I've had from the Broadcasting Authority in 30 years of radio?
Not many.
Upheld, I'm talking about, upheld.
None.
None. Not one single complaint upheld in 30 years.
Mm.
And yet, people think I'm a shock jock.
Mm.
I hate that term, by the way.
Mm.
I'm outspoken in some way.
Mm.
No, I just give a balance and I give the other side.
Mm.
And if that's what shocking is, to give the other side, I'm all right with that then, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't hear the other side regularly. You know, you don't hear the stories. I mean, I'm the right wing or something like that. And I'm not right wing. I'd be slightly centre-right, maybe. You know, I'm conservative. But I'm not a lunatic. I'm not a racist.
Just to put that in context, by the way, for our listeners, if Niall says he's centre-right, if that was American terms, he'd be a socialist.
Probably.
a
rhino.
Really, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So it is peculiarly skewed the way the
labelling is
labelling
wrong.
Is skewed now.
I mean, look at what's happening at the moment. The government are doing exactly what they accused the right wing of doing 6 months ago. 6 months ago, the right wing.
Let's just get a few things straight here now, because just this is an appropriate time to do it. So you're not right wing in inverted commas,
no.
Are you?
Well, no.
If you were anything on that spectrum, you say you might be slightly centre right.
Yeah.
Okay. You don't believe in far right organisations in Germany, France.
Not at all.
It's unlikely you support Jean-Marie Le Pen or his daughter.
No. No, and by the way, for example, when people were at protests and they were chanting up at hotel windows, refugees out, go home, go home. I was one of the first ones on the radio to say, don't do that. It's not their fault. Your problem is with the government who allowed people to do that, who've made a system or put in place a system where we don't enforce immigration laws and allowed people to abuse that law.
Okay, now,
so that's not their fault.
Do you find yourself that you are portrayed as right?
Yes.
Who, by who?
Well, there was an article in the Phoenix magazine yesterday, and it talked about the right-wing candidates, and they kind of lumped me in with a few other people.
Do they, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, I don't mind. I don't care. Because when you're in my position, you have to stop caring what people think.
Mm.
Because I know the people who listen to me on the radio and the people who are listening to me in the campaign at the moment, maybe hear me on the television or radio talking, I know they know I'm just speaking sense.
Mm.
I'm just speaking common sense.
Okay.
Okay, it might, for a lot of politicians out there, it might be, oh, Jesus, you know, but that's common sense.
Okay, give me three main pillars of common sense, the simple ones that you are talking, that you are not hearing from our people in government.
Well, okay, Regine Zardy, of course, was on the, what's called the VMT last night, talking about things. Regina recently said there was 9 genders. Not 100 genders, not 1 or 2 genders. There was 9. It's quite a specific number. And people go mad. I always go, no, there's 2 genders. There's male and female. Now, I wouldn't disrespect people. I don't, like, if somebody said to me, I want to identify as a woman, far away. Identify as a light bulb, if you like. I'll switch you on. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not going to disrespect somebody or, you know, or if I see a man in a dress, that's fine. If that's what you want to do, you do that. You live your life the way you want to live your life. I never want to judge anybody. Go ahead and do it.
Mm.
But I'm not going to call you they or Z or whatever it is. So that's one bit of common sense, I think. I talk about sex education in schools, which I think is vital, by the way, when you get to a certain age. But recently, of course, we've seen this kind of push to, you know, bring it down to lower age groups. Now, I understand that children have access to the internet and mobile phones nowadays, and we don't want them hearing it from them before you hear it from us. And we have bad parents who don't teach their children about sex and consent and all those things. I get all of that. But we still have to be appropriate. And when I see, for example, you know, currently at the moment we're trying to introduce, you know, appropriate sex education or relationship education and gender ideology education to 7 and 8 year olds, I go, that's not appropriate. You know, I'm a parent. I'll decide when my child needs to know about that stuff. And I'll decide if my child needs to know there's more than 2 genders. Or I'll decide if my child knows that a man can become a woman or a woman can become a man. That's my decision as a parent, not the school's. And that's fine if people want to do that to their kids and tell their kids that all that kind of stuff is possible. You fire away and do it to your kids. You know what I mean? You suffer the consequences of that later in life. But I wouldn't be doing it. And the other common sense is, well, of course, we've just talked about, you know, the refugee status in this country and the immigration. Immigration laws in this country have been abandoned. I don't know who gave the order going back possibly 4 or 5 years ago that we don't implement laws anymore. But when somebody walks into your country with no passport, no identification, has multiple identifications. Actually, there was one guy in Cork last week. He's a prisoner in Cork. And they found out he had 27 different IDs. Yeah, he had something like 23, I think, in France and 5 in Britain. So we don't, and then the judge said, well, what's his name? Well, we don't really actually know, but this is the name he's given us. This is Ireland. We have a duty and a responsibility to protect our borders. We're a little island in the middle of the ocean, technically speaking. There's water all around us. It couldn't be easier. And most countries don't have that advantage because they've land borders. We have that advantage and we still can't get it right. It's just implement the laws that are there. We have good immigration laws, by the way, robust immigration laws. And if they need to be changed, I hear the minister saying all the time, yeah, well, there's a bit of the law there. There's a bit of a loophole. The High Court said we can't do this or this. And I'm going, great, change the law. So, oh, that might take time. And I'm going, but you could do it during COVID overnight.
Yeah.
Why can't you do it now?
Yeah.
Because I consider what we're going through at the moment an emergency. And when I go to the doors every day and when I'm out in shopping centres and I'm handing out leaflets and all the rest, the one thing I'm hearing from everybody is immigration.
Yes.
Immigration, immigration. And I understand that could be grossly exaggerated because it's in the media.
Yeah, here's an interesting maybe.
But it is a problem.
But do you think that you're hearing immigration on the doorsteps because they feel it is a problem or because they're hearing it is a problem?
No. I tell you what it is. their lives have been greatly affected in the last 10 years because most people are earning pretty much the same money they were earning 10 years ago. But everything is a lot more expensive.
Yeah.
Their daughters and sons can't afford to buy a house in Dublin anymore.
Okay.
They're pissed off. Their electricity bill is double what it was 4 years ago. They've no extra money in their pocket to head off to Marbella during the summer for the weekend or whatever it is. So they're not enjoying their life as much as they used to. And then all of a sudden, you know, Paddy comes in from a different country outside.
That, I'm always wary of that, though, Niall.
And he gives it, he gets this and he gets this. No.
You know where I'm going with this.
No, I know.
People feel the economy is in shrinkflation. We're going backwards. And then I'm seeing at the same time a load of brown people coming into the country. Conflate the two.
You see what you just did there?
Yeah, but...
You said the brown people. I never mentioned the brown people. Look, let's talk about Ukrainians then if you want to.
Okay.
They're not brown people.
Okay.
Okay. So it doesn't matter where people are from. I've never brought colour into any argument in my life because I don't believe colour is relevant. And I'll give you an interesting story about that, okay, just before I come back to finish what we're saying. Okay. About 7 or 8 years ago, I was walking down the road who was an acquaintance of mine, not a friend, an acquaintance, a guy I had to meet up or something, right? And we're walking down the road, and this guy goes by, a brown person, in a car, nice BMW. And he nudges me and goes, bleeding the soil, I'm sick, because I'm getting everything, aren't they?
Yeah.
And I said, what are you talking about? And he goes, oh, man, look at him. I said, how do you know he's an asylum seeker? Mm-hmm. He doesn't even tell. And I said, how do you know he's not a doctor? Or he's not a lawyer? Or a school teacher? Just because he's black, you're telling me that he's an asylum seeker? That's wrong. That's a problem. Colour should never, ever, ever come into it. Ever. So we'll take Ukrainians then. Let's take the colour out of it if you want. So these people who feel, I suppose, they've been affected badly over the last 10 years by the cost of living, the raise in the cost of living, and their lives are not as good as they should be, and their daughters and sons are pissing off to Australia because they can't afford to live in the city. They see the Ukrainian come to Ireland, getting a free medical card, getting money every month for somewhere to live, getting 220 quid or whatever it is, getting free medical care, getting whatever it is, and they can't understand why they can't get that. They're Irish citizens. Oh, look, they're getting modular homes. My son would love a modular home. You know what I mean? There's somebody, I had a woman on the air one night crying to me because her son was living with her, with his girlfriend, and they couldn't get a house because they were slightly over the amount of money to get HAP. So they couldn't get a house. They're still living with her, and she was giving out, she was mallow in Cork, that they just built these modular homes for Ukrainians. And she said, my son and daughter would love one of those homes. And so that affects people. And that's what creates this division. If the government looked after the people of this country as well as they looked after people coming in, and that's what people believe, that's the perception they have, we wouldn't have the divide in society. The division that's been created at the moment, this almost hatred in society, has been created by a government making bad decisions. It's not been created by the people. They drive the people to feel like that. When you see those protests, there's always going to be a few head cases and protests. We know that, right? But most of them are just women, children, fathers, mothers, who feel voiceless. They feel like nobody's listening to them anymore. So they feel the only action they can take is to go out on a protest. Now, you might think it's right or wrong, but that's what they feel. And we can't take that away from them, because that's the way they feel. And if we treated them properly, and if the government didn't make such bad decisions, they wouldn't feel like that. And they might be more welcoming. We are a generous, welcoming country.
We are, of course. But when you say protests, are you referring to, for example, that this is Ireland. We are Ireland. The tricolour. The fellas with a little flag in his avatar going patriot. Now, the word patriot to me, right, when I was 15, loved that word.
Yeah.
Fucking hate it now.
Yeah.
I would never use the word patriot now. Do you know why? Because it's been completely sullied by social media.
It's been sullied by a small amount of individuals. It's okay to use the word patriot. It's okay to use the word sovereignty. But it's okay to have an Irish flag.
Commandeered the word.
Right. And by the way, I don't agree with, you know, defacing the Irish flag and writing on a big marker, refugees out or something. That's what gives it the negativity.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily agree with that either. But there's nothing wrong with the word patriot. There's nothing wrong with the word sovereignty.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with all those words. You are right, but there's a very small amount of people who've done that. But they're noticeable, unfortunately.
They're noticeable, yeah, they're loud.
Most of the people who are at protests, most of the people who have problems or objections.
So you're saying there's a loud vocal minority?
It's a really small minority, but they make a lot of noise.
Just one other quick question for the coalface that you're at.
Yeah.
We talked about Ukrainians and brown people at the beginning.
Mm.
Are they not different, though, in people's perception, in the patriot's perception? In the patriot, I'm a patriot. there's immigration and there's Ukrainians.
Famous broadcaster in this country. Very famous broadcaster. Won't mention his name, right? But people would remember who it was. And nice guy. Really nice guy, right? So he's on the air one day, going back about 2.5 years ago, just as it started in Ukraine. And he said, I was watching the news today. And he said, it was terrible, terrible watching all those people fleeing their country in Ukraine. And he said, women and children, men, getting on trains to evacuate. And he said, you know what struck me? They look just like us. I said,
a lot of people said that.
But here's the thing, they look just like us.
I know.
So what's he saying?
I know.
Indirectly and no harm to
him. No, it was programmed bias into him.
But that's what I'm saying. Not indirectly some form of racism.
It was an unconscious.
Absolutely. But the person didn't mean it
that
way.
No, he did not mean it, no.
No, and you know what I'm talking about, don't you?
No, I don't actually.
Okay. Well, he didn't mean it in that way.
Mm.
And I know he didn't mean it in that way. But we're really quick to grab.
I do know, actually. I'll tell you how I might know who it is. It's the words that you said and this sort of, there was a kind of a national monologue.
Mm.
Tone, yes. Of how he said it. So now I do know who you mean, yes.
Okay.
But we don't have to say who it is.
No. But what I'm saying to you is, this is again what we've done in society. So we have created this division in society for people. And the racism, I don't believe it's real racism. I used to always say years ago, there's a difference in racism, intolerance and ignorance. They all kind of lead to the same thing. My da, right, he was intolerant. He was probably ignorant of his time, right? And my mother would have been the same, probably as all our mothers and fathers were, because in Ireland back in the 1960s, there were no brown people. You know, there weren't really. Laurie Hartz, Phil Innes,
yeah.
You know, there was no brown people. And I remember a really funny story. My mum, I was only young at the time, I was about 12 or 13 years of age, and the Olympics was on. And there was a runner called, people who are into sport remember this because I don't remember who he was or where he was from, but Kip Keino, I think was his name.
Kip Keino, yes, he was the Kenyan marathon runner.
But you know, my mother said to me, my mother turned around to me and says, you know, they're brilliant runners, them. I said, what? And she says, black people. I said, they're great runners. And she said, yeah, yeah, because that's what they do. And I go, where is she getting this from? I was only 12 and I realised there was something wrong with what she was saying.
Well, inversely, she's actually correct.
But they are great runners.
Well, no, I mean, they run, they're culturally, the Kenyans run all the time.
Okay.
They run to school, they run.
But I don't think that's what she meant.
No, she didn't mean
that. No, I don't think that's what she meant.
No, she wasn't a cultural Kenyan scholar, no. She did not say I have a degree in Kenyan economics there.
But what I'm saying is, so that was inbuilt into us, but we were harmless. And if I go back to school, there was one black lad in my school, okay? And we were all great mates. We didn't notice he was black. Do you understand what I'm saying? There was no racism. Even when there was black people in Ireland at the very start, there was no race. We didn't even know what racism was. Nobody talked about racism. You know what I mean? We didn't observe it. It just wasn't a thing for us. We seen black people on the telly all the time. And we thought, he's a great actor, isn't he? She's a great actress, whatever it was. And they might have been black, but we didn't notice these days.
Yeah.
I think racism has only got, it's got actually worse because we're talking about it all the time and we're telling people they're racist.
Yes,
do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
We're designing racism.
Yes,
to a degree.
Yes, no, that's a good point.
You know, because I don't notice skin colour.
Yeah.
Just like I don't, when we talk about homophobia, I don't care if somebody's gay. You know, and I will wish there was no such thing as the word gay or straight. And I think maybe in 30 years' time, there will be no such thing as the word gay or straight. You're just a person who has sex. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There should be no words for these things because we're dividing people all the time. So it goes back to what I was saying. The people, I suppose, who feel disenfranchised, they feel their lives are not as good anymore, they're losing their sons and daughters to Australia and Canada and all these places, they want a better life. They want a fair life because they're working hard, most of them. And they just want a fair life. And then they see other people getting stuff, inverted commas. And that upsets them and it creates that division between us.
Okay, the person that's sitting opposite me here, Niall Boylan, I see as if you're a genuine person, there's no question. I sat down with you for a couple of hours 2 years ago and there's no question you're a genuine person. You come from the right place. You are also a caring person. You care about people. You can't listen to people for years and years and years without having some form of empathy. in you. You're not just a blowhard, although you like to talk a lot. That doesn't mean you don't also like to listen. And you have listened to a lot of people. I've heard that you took over 250,000 calls, it's estimated.
That's, we've estimated.
Yeah, from your listeners over the years. So, you know, like, what? You said politically incorrect a couple of times, right?
Yeah.
Now, another word that's being kind of weaponized by people from all sides is the word woke. For you, what is woke?
I don't use the word woke too often, by the way. But I mean, woke is kind of one of these kind of social justice warriors who gives out about everything, really. You know, and nothing is really right, to be honest with you, with a woke person. I'm trying to give an example of somebody who I would build, well, there's a lot of them out there. Generally, socialists are woke. You know, we've got a few socialist parties out there at the moment. Most of them are all woke. I mean, they just complain about everything. You know, they're not willing just to let life roll on. So, you know, if you turn around to them and you say something like, you know, I seen some pregnant women there last week, you know, you mean pregnant person? And I go, no, I meant a woman, is what I actually meant. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we have politicians, for example, who were afraid to identify what a woman is. Mm. I think it's quite shocking, by the way, in 2024, that the majority of politicians, if you went up and said, what's a woman? Mm. That they actually just can't answer the question. Well, it, you know, well, somebody who identifies as a woman. And I go, no, it's not. It's a person who was born with the ability, in most cases, to have a child and the reproductive organs of a female.
And it's not endemic in Ireland. I mean, Keir Starmer had a tremendous problem with it as well.
He did.
He was asked. He was asked 17 times, I think, in a row, on radio once. Can a woman, Mr. Starmer, have a penis? Yes or no?
That's right.
And he couldn't answer.
I mean, why can't somebody say no? A woman can't have a penis because that's not a woman. That's a man.
Mm.
You know, I mean, unless they're intersex, which is quite rare, by the way, a biological anomaly. But the idea that somebody can't, and women have fought for their rights to have spaces, their own spaces, and equality for years. And all we're doing now is taking it back again. And you know what it is?
Mm.
It's actually women that are doing it to themselves.
Mm.
Because the majority of people that I see that go on about pregnant people and chest feeding and all this nonsense, the majority of them are actually women.
Mm-hmm.
Women defending the men who want to be women.
Mm-hmm. Okay, on the doorsteps, right?
Yeah.
You've already explained to me how the reaction, the people's mood on the doorsteps is much, what people care about on the doorsteps is not being portrayed in the media accurately. What about abuse? Have you, people see you walking up to the doorstep and they go, here they is, that they're on for election now. Have you received abuse?
See, what happened is, and this is all new to me, obviously I've never done this in my life, so the first day I went down, I was all excited. This is great. Newbie. They're going to be hugging me and everything.
Thank you, Niall! Niall! He's arrived!
Shaking hands, kissing babies, all that kind of stuff. Didn't quite work out like that.
No?
No, because what happens is, so I think the first day we were at Croke Park, right? And you're standing there with the leaflets, right? You've got a team of people as well wearing Niall Boylan T-shirts, which was nice. And so you're going, how you doing? You wouldn't give us... And they're going... And they're walking up there with their eyes head in the air, right? Right, and you walk, and you go, how you doing? So I'm Niall Boylan from the radio. Oh, Niall, it's yourself. Oh, you know. I have my boat. And then they warm to you immediately once they realise, or you hand them the leaflet. They're not even looking, no eye contact. Oh, look, you hand them the leaflet. And as they walk about 3 yards behind, they stop and they turn around. Sorry, no, I didn't realise it was you.
Okay.
So I think what happened is people hate politicians.
Yes.
In general, they just hate politicians. But because they see me as something different, they're really warming to me. I've only had one abusive person. And to be honest with you, it wasn't really much. I mean, he just walked past me, and as he walked past me, bleeding fascist! Go on, you fascist!
Is that right?
Yeah, he roared back at me.
Yeah.
I don't consider myself a fascist, by a stretch of the imagination. No. But I went, you're a nice lad. I said, give us a vote, will you? Offer me bleeding dead body!
Yeah.
Was that was the only person that actually said something nasty to me.
Yes.
But most people have been really, really nice.
Okay, good. And how have you found getting coverage for yourself? How have you found... Have you found it as difficult or easy to... You're on the Mario Rosenstock podcast now. You said you were on News Talk this morning with Kira and Shane.
I was.
They like talking... Well, Kira likes talking common sense anyway.
Yeah, she does.
Shane sometimes offers himself as the slightly the pillar against the
Yeah, he's a bit woke, isn't he?
I mean,
I believe he's a really nice guy.
He is a little bit woke.
He's a nice guy. I don't know him.
No, he is a bit woke. But I like that about him. Because for me, woke often means you are cognizant and thinking about the feelings of other people.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas we still haven't got to the bottom of the word woke yet, what woke actually means.
There is no real meaning to it. It's a general term.
But anyway, so do you find it difficult to get on the radio and television?
Not really, okay. Right?
Everybody wants you?
But I've had a few want me, yeah. And I've been lucky. I've got a good bit of press coverage, you know, and, you know, about different things and what have you. And we do put out press releases, obviously, because that's what you do during a campaign. You send the press off bits and pieces and some of them will pick it up. Mm-hmm. So we've got a fair bit of publicity. Mm-hmm. And 99% of it has been really good.
Yeah.
The only thing is the debates. That's the difficult task. Yeah. Because they're important.
Yeah.
And I will most likely be excluded from the debates.
Yeah.
And because of the criteria they use, which is, anyway, I mentioned this about TV3, yeah, and RTE will probably do the same. So there are people who are right down the page,
yeah,
who have probably no chance of being, yeah, elected. They will be on the debate, but I won't, even, yeah, though I'm third.
Yes.
And that's because I'm not part of the establishment. And I think it's very undemocratic, because you've got the first part of the criteria is those who've already been elected. So Claire Daly, for example, Barry Andrews and Kieran Cuff. Okay? So they're running again. So they'll automatically get back onto the debate. They've just had 5 years over there. Nobody really knows who they are. I just say to people, what about Kieran Cuff? Who's he? I thought he's been over in Europe for the past 4 years. All right. Mm. Barry Andrews, the hide-and-seek champion. He's been over there for I mean, nobody knows really who they are.
Right.
I mean, Maria Walsh. I mean, you see these people going over to Europe, right, for 5 years. Most of them. And some of them have done a bit of good work over the years, right? But most of them, they just disappear for 4.5 years. And then they come back and they start cutting ribbons to open supermarkets again just to get re-elected again. What have you done? What have you actually done when you're over there? Most of them have done very little. Mm. It's a holiday. And that's not what I want. And I've made a promise on that, by the way. I have my own podcast, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But I promised I'd still keep the podcast up. I'll have to reschedule it, obviously. I'm going to still keep the podcast up. I'm going to do it at the weekends. Mm. And I'm going to come back and tell people every week, here's what I was doing this week. Here's the debates I was at. Here's what I'm voting for. Here's what I'm going to be doing in Strasbourg. Mm-hmm. Tell me what you want me to do. Mm-hmm. Do you want me to vote for this or do you not want me to vote for this? How do you feel about it? Mm-hmm. And I'll get their input. Mm-hmm. So I promised I'll do that. So to keep, because I wanted to be like the reporter over there, their eyes and ears. You know, their watchdog, not their lapdog. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Are the public always right?
Not always. Sometimes we have to make decisions.
I was cognizant there of you saying, I listen to them and I just do what they say.
No, not always. But most of the time they are. Most of the time. If you get a majority consensus on something, it's probably right. But there are times that you have to make decisions.
Brexit.
there's two trains of thought on Brexit. It's difficult to tell with Brexit now. It's still early days. I mean, they said from the very start, it'll take 20 years. 20 years. Before you decide, was Brexit a good idea? You know, I mean, I'm not anti-Europe, by the way, by any stretch.
I mean, the early signs are appalling, but...
Yeah, I mean, and there was a poll in the paper last week that asked people about leaving the EU and what you thought of the EU generally. I mean, and the EU is a good thing because originally it was designed for countries to come together and work together.
Well, stop killing each other, really.
Yeah, essentially.
In world wars.
Yeah. And for it to, you know, financially work together as well, to help each other. And that was the plan. But the problem was it's been infiltrated over the years with people who are all of the same mindset. And that's a problem. Now, we're going to see a change this year because if you look across the countries of Europe now, there's a lot of, inverted commas, right wing moving in or going running for election. And a lot of them will get elected. Now, I don't want to see an extreme right wing European Union, but I don't want to see an extreme left wing European Union. I want to see a balance.
Yes, which is basically common sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So then you will have people who go, oh, no, you can't do that.
Yeah.
You know, so at least, and that's what we've always had in society. That's what we need in Ireland as well. I mean, would you go right back in time in Ireland? You're the country ruled with the Catholic Church, yeah, the iron fist of the Catholic Church, which was the opposite the way it is now. So the pendulum swung, but swung too far.
Yes.
It needs to swing back just a little bit.
Okay.
Slow us down.
You're a broadcaster, and broadcasters are often, there's often the misapprehension about broadcasters that they're loaded, that they get paid very, very high salaries, and not everybody works in RTE. And you are running for election, and housing is one of our main difficulties in this country, and problems. And you've had your own direct issues with this. I mean, for a couple of years, you had a very, very hard time even living anywhere. You were living...
Homeless.
You were homeless. Mm. Explain that period to me.
I can't go into too much of how I ended up like that because it's family law.
No, explain the
what, okay, but what? No, I was separated at the time. Yeah. I was waiting for a divorce, going through a divorce, what have you, and then I got divorced, right? And then I just found myself with nowhere to live. Mm. And I was doing two shows a day,
yeah,
on Classic Hits, which I was the hardest working broadcaster in the country. So I'm doing two shows a day.
Morning and evening.
I was doing the 12 to 2, yeah, and then I was doing the 9 to 11, yeah, at night, yeah, at the time. So it meant I couldn't really go anywhere. Mm. You know what I mean? And anyway, so what I would do is I'd go off, have my dinner in the coachman's, maybe in Swords or something like that, go back to the car park at, you know, 6 o'clock, have a kip in the car under the duvet, and then go back into work because I had nowhere to stay. And but I was in the Travelodge at one stage. I was getting a good deal. It was a corporate rate because I only needed it for 4 days, right? Because I was working for 4 days. At the weekend, I could find somewhere else to stay. That was fine. I could travel and find somewhere to stay. So I only needed it for 4 days. And but the problem was, when the whole Ukrainian crisis started, the hotels, of course, were being used, and all of a sudden they put their prices up, and I couldn't afford to do that anymore. And I ended up then having to sleep in the back of the car, you know. And there was months, by the way, where I didn't really have the money even with the Travelodge, to be honest with you, because you had other financial commitments too, you know, in relation.
I'm not being prurient here, but like, let's be honest, what's it like sleeping in a car?
It's not fun.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing.
Does it get cold? Or do you keep the heater on?
You put the heater on while you're going to sleep, and then you can turn it off. But I had a duvet.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah,
on the back seat. It's like a BMW 5 Series.
So you just sleep in the back seat.
Car, I couldn't put the back seats down.
No.
So, you know what I mean? So I just had to sleep on the back seat. But it was a wide car and I'm a small person.
So it was BMW?
Yeah.
So you weren't really homeless.
What's that famous joke?
What a fucking crybaby. This guy going on about living in his car. It's a fucking BMW 5 Series.
What's that famous story? What's the difference between a hedgehog... Wasn't it a hedgehog and a BMW?
What? Oh, yeah. The pricks are on the outside of the hedgehog. I only thought of that now. I didn't even know it.
It was humiliating. It was embarrassing. And there was staff coming into the radio station who would have seen my car, probably, the breakfast show staff, right? And they're going, Jesus, Niall's in early. Didn't they know Niall is asleep in the back seat of the car? And I was very lucky.
How was your morale during that time?
Shit. It was awful.
Yeah, I mean,
it was terrible.
If you're going through a marriage breakup, which a lot of people blame themselves for the failure of relationships, often unfairly so, and then you are further sort of demeaned personally by having to sleep in a car, I would wonder, you would need to be a person who has great resilience to withstand that emotionally. I presume it really, really affected you.
It did, because you're kind of sitting there going, I'm 55 at the time.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there going, I've spent my whole life.
I know.
Working my arse off. I had a really nice house.
I'm in a car.
Yeah, family, all that. Here I am, sitting in a car, sleeping in a car, nowhere to sleep, and didn't have the money. And, you know, I just, like, I don't, contrary to popular belief, by the way, as you well know, unless you're working for RTE, you know, the money is a presenter. It's okay. It's, you know, I'm not giving out about how much I was being paid. I was being paid an okay salary. But when you build up your certain lifestyle, you know, just like everybody else, you're broke on the 30th, you know what I mean, or by the 24th, you know what I mean? So it was really, really difficult. I had some really bad moments, and it kind of took me back to when my marriage broke down first. I think I mentioned that to you the last time we were talking. Yes. I was up on Howth Head, and, you know, and I nearly wasn't here anymore. And it kind of took me back to that. I was very depressed, deeply depressed. But what kept me going constantly is my wife. She's my wife now. She was my partner. I don't like the word girlfriend. It makes people sound very young. Partner at the time. Oh, the partner makes it sound very old.
No, but it's partner, not a bit woke.
Isn't it? Yeah.
My life partner. Yes. Grow up, you fascist.
Yeah, I'm not in the same sex relationship, just in case.
I live in a BMW boot of the car with my life partner in the corner of the glove compartment, right?
Without her, I don't think I'd get through these things, because I've never experienced what I've experienced in the last 7 years of mental health and depression, until of recent times. I've, up to that point, my life has been good. You know what I mean? And I didn't experience that, I've never had those kind of calamities happen in my life. So I wasn't used to it, and I wasn't good at dealing with it. And the best way I dealt with it was being on the radio. I was dying to be behind the microphone.
Yeah.
Because I could go into the studio, close the door, and nobody could get at me.
Yes.
Nobody could call me. Nobody could ring me up and give out to me.
Also, you had a community to talk to, a community who you understood were happy to listen to you.
Yeah, and my producer, Helena, she was amazing. She was like my best friend at the time.
Yeah.
And she got me through so many things.
Yes.
It was so difficult. But in saying that, I stepped in the car. And then I had a listener who was a regular listener to the show, asked the producer for my phone number. And the producer said, do you mind if I give out your phone number? The listener wants to call you. And who is it? And I said, oh, yeah, go ahead. And she rang me and said, look, Niall, I heard you mention something on the air tonight, and I put two and two together. She said, where are you living? And I said, Look, between me and you, I said, don't know him, but I said, I'm not living anywhere. Really, I said, I'm in a really difficult situation. She said, look, I have a spare room in the house. You're welcome to it. You know, if you want to use it for a couple of nights a week. And I was really embarrassed by that. You know, here's a listener to my show offering me a bed to sleep in.
Absolutely.
And I took it.
Yes.
Yeah, and it was... I literally slept in the bed. I was mortified. She said, look, make yourself at home to it. I go, that's okay. I'll just arrive there at 12 o'clock. I'll sleep. I'll get up the next morning and go. And you won't see me again for the rest of the day. So I literally just slept in the bed. Used the shower.
Amazing person.
Yeah. And she was so good. So good.
How beautiful.
And then she had to move. This is, it gets better, okay? So she had to move because, I don't know the personal reasons, but she had to move. And she said, look, I have bad news. I have to move. But I spoke to my sister. She has a spare bed. And she'll give it to you if you want to use that. And I said, oh. I said, I'm mortified. You know, I'm a radio presenter. You know, I'm supposed to be somebody who's kind of looked up to a little bit in society. You know, somebody who does well, who does okay. And then here I am being offered rooms by complete strangers that I don't know apart from talking to them on the radio. And they're like Samaritans.
Yes.
They're like angels. Somebody sent them. Maybe it was my mother or something sent them.
Yeah.
But I stayed there then for about 2 or 3 months as well. You know, so that, you know, I didn't use it every night because I was embarrassed. I was mortified. You know, I didn't want to be going to somebody else's house.
So you went back to the 5-star BMW at the minute, did you?
Yes, I did the BMW again for a little while too, on odd nights and stuff like that, you know. But that went down for about 2 years.
Jesus.
Yeah.
That's hard to understand.
Things got better. Yeah.
That's hard to understand. I'll talk about your podcast in a second. What's the energy levels like? I mean, the reason I'm saying is I detect from your personality that you are quite a highly energized person. You've got good reserves of energy. I know them. I can see them a mile off. And but there must be tests and on your energy because people, the kinetic energy of talking and giving to people 20 hours a day or 15 hours a day on the road, as you should be at the moment, must be tiring, is it? Or is it a buzz?
No, you know what the hardest part for me is? So I've never used my phone as much as I have in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Campaign manager and the guy does social media and all that sort of stuff for the political party.
Yeah.
Constantly ringing me all the time. Ring, 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 ring.
Yeah.
I spent, like yesterday, 5 hours going from one phone call to the next. So you'd be on the phone and you'd be going, hold on, wait a minute, Johnny is calling.
That's exhausting.
And it was just like, oh, the Irish Independent, look at you. Oh, your man from the Irish Times wants to talk to you about something. Or news, Northside News wants to talk to you about something.
Yeah.
It was just, oh, God. It's like, I had to sit down on one stage with Karen. I sat down and she said, are you okay? And I said, no, I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
I said, my brain is just full.
Yeah, it's fried.
It's just full. My brain got just full for about an hour or so where I couldn't actually compute anymore because there was so much information coming in. You know, well, you're on this debate next week, you're on Drive Time next Wednesday, blah, 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 blah. And I go, okay, we need to talk about the questions I'm going to ask you.
Yeah.
All this kind of stuff. So your brain just gets full of stuff.
Yeah.
And then, oh, we need you to do a video for this, tell them to vote, register.ie. Yeah. And it's just everything coming in.
From my experience of time like this, I mean, I've often found that the only way to deal with it is just try and get in a good night's sleep. That's all.
Mm.
It's sleep.
Don't do that, Mario.
That's the only thing you can do.
I don't.
Don't drink.
No.
If possible.
I don't drink alcohol.
That'll fry your brain.
But here's the thing. I drink 5 cans of Red Bull a day.
That's not good.
Yeah, I buy them on special offer. Yeah. You buy the 12-pack. Special offer, I go through the 12-pack in about 2 days.
Niall Boylan gives you wings.
I'm running for Europe.
So I drink Red Bull a lot because I don't like Coke or Coca-Cola.
No.
Because by the way, I don't do drugs, in case you want. But I don't like Coca-Cola because it gives me wind. And because I'm on radio or doing the podcast, the last thing you need is me going, Mario's...
Niall Boylan gives you wind.
Sorry.
Okay, your podcast. Your eyes lit up when I asked you about... You were talking about your podcast. Is it a new podcast?
I started the podcast this time last year.
This time last year. What's it called?
It's called Niall Boylan's Podcast. They told me to shut up.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you sort of said it's going really well.
Really, really
How do you know it's going really well?
Well, you know by downloads.
Oh, do you?
Are you getting
a lot of downloads?
Loads.
How many?
Well, we worked it out between the live views. Okay, so we go out live on Twitter, on Facebook and YouTube. Monday to Thursday.
You go live on Twitter?
Live on Twitter, live on Facebook and live on YouTube. Every day between 12 and 2 o'clock. We take callers on the air. Same as the radio show. We take callers on the air. We have guests on Zoom. You know, might have a guest about the topic we're talking about or whatever. On Zoom at the same time. It's all live on video.
Okay.
You know? I have a good guy working with me in that does everything. Mm. I have to just turn up. So between the live views and the downloads per month, we're now at about 650,000, which is just astonishing. You know, now we lose out on the live views, technically speaking, because they're getting to see it for free, because they can watch it live. There's no advertising on it. Now, with the downloads, obviously, it goes to the system and they get advertising.
Do you have some advertising on it?
On the downloads, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's on Amazon, it's on, you know.
But have you been able to get money from advertisers?
Absolutely.
Decent?
Yeah.
Some decent revenue
money.
Coming in?
Yeah, decent money coming in.
Okay. So
it's
you
not,
can...
Yeah, not going to set the world on fire.
And that can help to pay your...
Look, you know what the money is like for advertising on podcasts.
Yeah, very small. Yeah,
yeah, it's like 1 cent an ad or something like that. But when you have 180,000 downloads in a month or whatever it is, that 1 cent can add up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, those figures you're mentioning, and I just think it's generous of you to mention them, but because there's a peculiar thing about podcasting, nobody is allowed to talk about figures.
Why not? Yeah, why not?
Yeah, so I don't understand why people don't, you know, just share information more than that, you know?
Yeah, well, I think it's good for other people coming into the industry to know that it's possible, but I suppose podcasting is a bit like being a movie star or a pop star. Not everybody's going to make it, and I think the statistic is that most podcasts end within 3 months.
Yeah, of course. So it's doing well. They told me to shut up.
They told me to shut up. Yeah, it's on Monday to Thursday. Okay. And between 12 and 2.
Okay.
And you can catch it live on Twitter, Facebook and YouTube.
Yeah. If I said that immigration, apart from common sense being an umbrella, if I said that immigration was the main thing you're running on, would that be right?
You mean for election?
The immigration issue.
No, I wouldn't say it's the main thing I'm running on. It just happens to be in the news at the moment. I mean, if you listen to every radio station and news station, it's the number one story on 6 1 News every night. It's the number one story on News Talk every day, probably, on most of the shows. So to suggest that it's the only issue I'm running on, or the one issue I'm running on, would be ludicrous.
Mm.
Because that just happens to be the big issue at the moment. And I've talked about it for years anyway. And I feel I'm quite good at talking about immigration. But there are other issues as well. You mentioned housing, of course.
Mm. What about other apolitical, if you like, sort of so-called apolitical candidates like, what's the man, Casey?
Peter Casey. I know Peter.
Yeah.
I know him quite well, actually. And he only rang me the other day because he hadn't decided whether he was going to run or not.
But does he not come across as a bit sort of intolerant?
In the presidential election, he kind of, I suppose he did well on the line that, would you like a traveller living next door to you? Wasn't that the line, the kind of thing that he put out in the debate?
Did well is a matter of choice.
Well, he did well because he came second, and it was the highest second place we've ever had in a presidential election. That his second place in that presidential election could have beaten other presidents in the past, based on the number of people that voted. So he did actually quite well. But it was all of one line, essentially, wasn't it? You know, I mean, look, Peter's an okay guy. I don't want to say I'm bad about him because I know him. He's a nice guy. Is he presidential material? He's going to run for president again, most likely.
Do you think you will be elected?
Peter?
No, do you think you will be elected?
Do I think I'll be elected? I'm very confident.
Mm.
Yeah, I am very confident. And I'm confident because I think people want a real change.
Okay.
They don't want just like a little shift. They want to try something different because they're not being offered anything different.
Has this been an eye opener for you?
Oh yeah, it's been weird being on the other side of the media.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you weren't elected but got close, would you be encouraged to continue?
That's a difficult question because, and Garen said that to me the other day, and I said, I don't know. I'll talk to you about it on the 8th of June.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know. I'd have to see how I feel, how disappointed I feel if I didn't get elected. Would I feel that disappointed?
Yes.
Would I be one of those types that would just say, doesn't matter, we'll do it again.
Yes.
I'm coming back for the general election or whatever. You know what I mean?
So, have you had any bad experiences with the media so far? What I mean by bad is, difficult, troublesome.
No, not really. I mean, I expected.
I saw you having a big argument with Kieran Cuddihy, did you? Or did you not?
Was that
just the clip?
No, it was...
Because we all try to make... you have a conversation with somebody and then we all kind of go, massive bust-up between Niall and Kieran!
Let's have a bust-up and put out that clip for this show.
Yeah.
Me and you just have a bit of a bust-up. We'll put out the clip for the show. It gets huge ratings and they realise the rest of it wasn't that good after all. Should we just do a little bit for the clip?
Okay, I'll do a little bit for the clip for you now, right? You are unapologetically a racist.
You?
For the last... No, you're a dog whistler.
Dog whistler.
See you.
What?
You're just living off other people's fame because all you do is their bloody voices.
I love every second of it.
You're nothing but a waste of nonsense, Doc. Can I tell you what? I've had enough of this nonsense.
I just care about... You racist. I just care about the money. Don't leave my studio like that. Come back.
Yeah, how's that? That'll be good.
Got it.
So, yeah, I was saying to you something about News Talk, right? So you talked about, you know, Kieran Cuddy, that was like a 20-minute bit, right? And the clip that went out, of course, was him having a go at me, right? I've worked in radio. I know what it's like when you get the person in. I'm like, we're coming in now. This is going to be tough, right? And I'm going to go, boy, right? So I know what that's about. I'm Kieran Cuddy. I've been the guy. So he was nice enough to me up to that point. Yeah. And then he starts asking me these questions about...
What did he ask you that was trying to have a go? I like Kieran, by the way.
Yeah, I like Kieran. Yeah, he's okay. He's a nice guy. I've only met him a few times.
What did he ask you that was...
Okay, he was saying, I'm looking on your website here and it says, you know, about housing. And he says, what are you going to do about housing in Europe? It says here about, healthcare. What are you going to do about healthcare in Europe? And I goes, can you let me just talk? And he goes, so you're standing on one issue of immigration. And I go, no, can you let me ask the question? You know, what are you going to do about all the... And he just...
Okay, so
he wouldn't let me actually answer the question.
No, so the substance of his... The inference was... You don't have any other policies besides immigration.
And he says to me, why are you mentioning these things on your website when you're not actually talking about them to me now? And I said, because you asked me about it. The reason I talk about other things, and yes, you are right. Some of those things I'm not going to be able to have an effect on in Europe. But 75% of our laws do come from Europe.
Yeah.
So eventually they do get to the door when somebody has put their hand up and said yes to them, right? But the reason I want to tell people how I feel about education, how I feel about healthcare, how I feel about all those things is... Because I want them to know who I am. I want them to know what I'm about. You know, the type of person I am. When you're doing a website or you're doing party policies, and obviously I have to align with the party policies, Independent Ireland. But when you're doing those things, you're trying to give people a sense of the person that you are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not...
I think, from my perspective, you are a well-meaning person. Your heart is in the right place and you do want to espouse common sense. But I also think that you wouldn't be lost going for member of the Parliament as well. You know, the Oireachtas going for being a TD. I think you're very Irish. You're very concerned. You're very rooted in this country. Mm-hmm. In fact, and you're very rooted in Dublin as well. So I wouldn't discount that either.
No, I wouldn't discount it either. And maybe in the future, I don't know. But I just felt that Europe was the place because, as I mentioned, 75% of our laws come from there. And when I see certain things over the last, couple of months in particular being voted for, it's almost like our MEPs want to be the best boys and girls in the class, and they just want to, oh yeah, we vote for that, yeah that's us, yeah we're okay with that, up on there, thing about climate, yeah that's us, or whatever, or that EU migration pact, yeah we'll take that, yeah. Why aren't they asking the Irish people? Because the Irish people don't agree with that, so much so that, say, the EU migration pact, and the Irish people are demanding or saying now, many of them, we want a referendum on this, which we can, by the way, have. Some people believe you can't have a referendum unless it's a constitutional change. You can actually have what they call, under Article 37, an ordinary referendum, which is decided by the president, if they believe that people need to have a choice in something. You know, which we should, because it's something that's gravely going to affect us going forward, that we can't change. So we should have a referendum. It should be put to the people. There are certain things I believe always should be put to the people. Now, you can't be having referendums every day of the bloody week. Yeah. I understand that. But there are certain things that if you have a dramatic and profound effect in society, that we should put to the people all the time.
All right. Niall, we've done it. We leave it there now. We've successfully finished part two of our conversation, which we started 2 years ago. Thank you very much for coming in. I wish you the best of luck in the election.
Thank you very much indeed, Mario. It's been a pleasure to be here.
You're a racist, Niall!
And my thanks to Niall Boylan for coming in and talking to me on the Mario Rosenstock podcast again for the second time. Don't forget... If you're a fan of what I do, if you're a fan of my comedy, I have put a huge show on sale. The Three Arena, Friday, March 28th, 2025. Celebrating 25 years of Gift Grub. Get in there, get the tickets while they're hot. I would love to see people who are fans of this podcast and fans of what I do coming to support me at the Three Arena on that one and only night. Please tell your friends, please tell your acquaintances or other people who like this podcast about that if you can. You can also contact me directly, mariorosenstock@gmail.com. I read them all and get back to most of them. Actually, I got back to three of them today. Mind yourself, take care. See you same time, same place next week.